So joining us this morning is Dr. Nabil Tariq, Medical Director of Bariatric Surgery at Houston Methodist Sugar Land Hospital. Today we are going to talk about healthy lifestyle, weight management, medications, and surgery. So without further ado, let's welcome Dr. Tariq. Good morning, Dr. Tariq. How are you doing today?
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Good. How has your weekend been so far? Oh, your weekend been, and how's your day been so far?
Weekend's been good. Everything's a relaxing weekend to prepare for a usual busy week.
Yes. So, we are really excited about this topic because when 2024, you know, we rung in 2024 and the first thing we say is, oh, we got to stay healthy or we got to start exercising. And we, you know, we've really indulged so much during the holiday season and now we need to get back to our weight and things like that. So I think this is a perfect time to talk about weight management and weight loss and healthy lifestyle.
Absolutely.
So, doctor, let me begin with what is weight management and why is it important for overall health?
It's in many ways the root cause of many our ailments these days, both in the not just the developed world, but even the developing world. Just in the U.S., almost 42% of adults suffer from being significantly overweight or obese. And thus, what's associated with that, especially as we live longer with the advances in medicine, is increasing diseases, whether it's high blood pressure, diabetes, joint problems, sleep apnea, even cancers are increased with increased weight. So I think it's important for overall health or longevity and just generally feeling well to have the weight under control through various different methods, of course. But I think because in many ways, it addresses the root cause of a lot of the ailments that we have.
And so, doctor, would you say is weight loss, you say with weight loss, weight management, is that the same thing or is there a difference?
It's essentially the same thing. But I suppose weight management can include staying, if someone's of a healthy weight, just to stay that way, as opposed to, especially as we age, it can become easier and easier to gain weight. Mm-hmm. We tend to become sometimes a little less active and, in Houston, they're always a heavy social agenda on the weekend with all the parties and the just get-togethers and stuff. So it can become tough to stay disciplined. So that's why I think it's important.
Yeah. And so why do you find that people struggle with weight management?
I think people struggle predominantly because the equation is so heavily tilted towards the intake part, meaning, you know, when you ask someone, why have you been gaining weight or why in general the population, they may say, well, they're not really active. We don't walk anywhere. We drive a lot. And that's partly true, but majority of it is, unfortunately, the foods are so rich now. They're so readily available. They're so calorie dense that, and now with all the, you know, Yelps and Uber Eats and everything, whatever you feel like eating, you can order many times. So that makes it very challenging because you cannot out-exercise your intake. Mm. And unfortunately, most of the foods available that are readily available, whether it's from restaurants or supermarkets, et cetera, are designed to be addictive and for you to get hooked on. So I think that's that's a big struggle for many people, because everything's readily available, even in any office you may work at. There's always someone's birthday. There's always someone, something going on, especially if you work in a larger office or, like for us, work in a hospital setting. So it can become difficult to budget your intake. You only have a certain amount of budget for the week, so you have to manage that.
So do you think, like, if we indulge, we are, say, for instance, we're in the office and we are celebrating someone's birthday, or, people yeah. give us food and stuff like that, all the rich food, but we keep up with the exercise, does that kind of help in a certain way? Because I don't know if that is a misconception, because I know, like, sometimes when we eat, we are eating all this rich food, or we are intaking alcohol for a celebration, and then we say, okay, it's okay, because, it'll all be done when I go back and, when I go and exercise the next day. So does that really help, or is that something that we're just kind of saying it to make ourselves feel better?
I think the latter. You hit the nail on the head in the sense that the problem is, most of us, unless we're really big exercises, meaning I'm talking about we go running for an hour, most of us cannot out-exercise our intake. No, you can't. Now, that doesn't mean you can't indulge, but the compensation has to come from also intake-related, in my opinion, meaning if you indulged in the afternoon for a lunch celebration for a colleague and a birthday cake you had, then that for dinner you got to be a little bit restrictive in terms of what your intake is going to be, and certainly eat foods that are less calorie dense and more meaning they're not very fatty or sugary, so you do have to control it in that way. But you're better off making if you're bargaining with yourself to do that on the diet front. I give my patients an example very much of shopping wise. If you go out and splurge this weekend and buy yourself a really expensive gift or purse, or if you buy some Gucci and Prada, then you have to be restrictive for the rest of the week or month, maybe, if it's that expensive. Otherwise, for most people, unless you're very high income, you're just trying to work extra hours, but those extra hours are never going to be able to catch up with mm-hmm. bad splurging habits. So it's sort of similar to food-wise. Exercise is good. It's good for health. But exercise has less of a role in weight loss. It's more of a role in general well-being, mental health, cardiovascular health. So it has benefits like that. But purely for weight loss, it's not the best tool.
Oh, wow. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that's a big misconception,
Wow. Absolutely. But it's a big misconception. The compensation, if you splurge, indulge, has to come not from exercise, but from adjusting for the rest. That doesn't mean you can't indulge. It just means every day doesn't have to be the best meal in your life. Every day doesn't have to be a 10 out of 10 on Yelp. If you go for that, then you're addicted to food, which is also not good. So sometimes you just eat. I'm not saying eat stuff that doesn't taste good to you, but at the same time, it doesn't have to be the bestest tasting thing ever.
Yeah, I guess we have to just be more mindful, right? Even during.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So. Sasha is here with me at the studio, and she keeps nodding her head, and I think she wants to add something to our conversation.
I do, actually. So there are like lots of different.
What happened in Costa Rica, you mean?
That is correct. So one of the questions I have is that there's all these like fad teas and things like that out there. And I have been guilty of taking those many of times just because I want that quick fix. And obviously there's no such thing as a quick fix. But what are your thoughts behind that? like weight loss teas or weight loss supplements?
Yeah, I think those don't. There are weight loss medications, which we can talk about in a bit, but that can be helpful. As far as teas and supplements go, you know, some of them, if the tea acts like, so various teas, even coffee, do have some mild appetite suppressant qualities. If you have a warm tea in the morning and that prevents you from, and that satisfies you enough from eating a donut or something like that, then it helps in that way. Mm. There isn't excessive magical properties that you can eat whatever you want and the tea will make you lose weight. Having a warm, soothing fluid, and then like I said, the teas, caffeines have some mild appetite suppressant quality that can help you feel satisfied enough that you may be able to skip some either skip a meal or at least eat less of something. So that's how I think it helps more. Now there may be some supplements, some weird concoctions that people sell that may cause your heart to race a little faster and other things. Those are not necessarily always safe, and even those, you know, they will burn. They may increase your metabolism very temporarily, slightly, but I don't necessarily think they're healthy. Unfortunately, there's no easy way out. It's mostly what can help adjust your dietary intake, whether it's lifestyle, behavior, medication, even surgery. But all these things, all they do is they affect your intake, and that's how they mostly have you lose weight. And so mostly it's that aspect.
So there's no magic cure, basically.
No, unfortunately, if there was, it would be the biggest deal in the world.
Someone has to create one, working on it. So, Doctor, you were talking about weight loss medications. Can you elaborate on them and the long-term effects as well?
Sure. So there are some weight loss medications, some types that have been around for a long time. And those are some medications called phentermine. There are other medications lately which have received a lot of press. In fact, one of the biggest stock booms, apart from the tech, have been in some of the pharmaceutical companies that make these medications. As a class, they're called GLP-1 agonists, but they're GLP-1 drugs. Mm-hmm. But a common one out there that people have been on social media is called Ozempic.
Yes.
Or Wegovy. And these medications are helpful in the sense that they've been around in various forms for over 10 years or so, treating diabetes, etc. But lately, they've also been an increasing interest in them helping people lose weight by mostly affecting your appetite and the way your stomach empties and works, and thus eating less food. Because hunger is hormonally related, there are various substances in your body that can make you more hungry or less hungry. And so some of the foods stimulate that. Some of the sugary foods can make you hungry because they may give you a short-term satisfaction, but then they spike your insulin and then they cause a sugar crash and then you want more of it. So a lot of these sugars are like drugs. They're addictive. They keep you wanting more and more. So you have to almost like detox off of it. And that's how these medications help by adjusting those desires and adjusting appetite.
Okay. And so are there any long-term side effects with the medication?
So there are some shorter term, longer term, there aren't any, I mean, in the sense that they can cause some bloating, some chronic nausea. Like some of these medications are given once a week. So if you, for the first day or two that you take them, they cause a little more nausea. That can persist every time you take it. Not persist, but be present every time you take it in the first day or two. But there are some short-term things. That, some of them can cause inflammation of the pancreas. But again, those are rare. I think in general, they say it's actually less than close to 1% or so, 1.5%. There are contraindicated in some patients who have a history of certain types of thyroid cancer. Overall, these medications, many diabetics are on it. Thousands, millions of diabetics have been on it. So it's not, they're not like a new class of, suddenly a completely new class of drugs that's not been known about, et cetera. So they've been around for a while. It's just the use for weight loss is newer.
Yeah.
In general, we say the side effects for most of these, many of these interventions of the chronic obesity are sometimes, many times more than the side effects of the medication.
Yeah, it's so fascinating that this, this medication was actually for, to treat diabetes. But now it's right. More, you know, like it's more about weight loss now. So if doctors, like someone comes and, you know, it's not, I mean, he or she is not diabetic, but wants to use it as a weight loss medication, can they be prescribed one, or is it specifically only for diabetic patients?
No, they can be prescribed under, physician supervision. The only issue these days is that... And we hope that will change in the next year or two, that although some of the insurances are starting to cover it for weight loss purposes, because at least a couple of these drugs, the FDA has approved for weight loss, not just for diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
But many of the insurances haven't caught up yet with those indications. So there can still be some pushback from the insurance companies. And some of these medications are still quite expensive, at least in the U.S. And in general around the world, they're still quite expensive. They can cost purely out of pocket with no insurance contributions. The brand name ones can cost $1,000 to $1,400, $1,500 a month sometimes. So the cost can be prohibitive for many patients, because some of the patients, if not many of the patients that struggle with weight, especially at the higher end of the obesity scale, they can be a minority or socioeconomically disadvantaged patients that will be difficult for them to afford.
These
medications. There are alternatives. Some compounding pharmacies work, but there's some controversy regarding how good that medication is or not, and some of the institutions recommend against that. But people have been using those as well. But even those can cost $500 a month or $600 a month. So it's not cheap if you're paying all out of pocket.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, like even though if someone is taking the medication, would you say that they should still balance off with proper eating, proper exercising? Because many times, you know, it's in our, you know, we think, okay, if we take this medication, it's like a miracle drug, right? It'll help us. And that's about it. We don't have to do the rest. So.
No, absolutely. Perfect. Great point to bring up, because it is. Many of the studies that were done with very strict lifestyle in combination with the medications, because the idea is not that, okay, if we make you eat less, you don't go from eating a double Whopper and a large fries to a single Whopper and the small fries. That's not the idea. The idea
right.
is you don't eat the double Whopper, at least not often. Maybe you can enjoy it for a occasional cheat meal, but But as far as the idea is that you have some grilled fish and non-starchy vegetables, or if it's lentils are healthy as you pay attention to how you make those. So, for example, for vegetarian patients, if they're eating lentils and okra, you can make okra really like fried, deep fried, or you can make it a little bit, less fried, maybe just sautéed. You can air fry it, and you can. But if certain ethnicities, like South Asians, they may still want the South Asian masalas.
Correct.
And that's fine. But you just don't. You just have to, take it easy on the oil part of it, and you can still make it tasty and so forth. And so a lot of this requires I tell my patients a lot, you cannot get away from kitchen experimentation. And I tell them your gym is your kitchen, so you have to spend. When you start to make this lifestyle change, when you decide that, you have to spend, at least in the beginning, invest some time. If you're a working person, then maybe some weekends in the kitchen, experimenting. What are three or four lunch items that you like? What are four or five dinner items and two or three breakfast items? You don't need to come up with a million items. Most people, as long as they come up with a few choices in each, then you can usually rotate between them, and you'll still have your weekend cheap meals when you go out and have some fun with, friends and family. But the majority, there are 21 meals in the week, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can easily splurge on three or four of those meals, as long as the rest 18 meals are, relatively healthy. And so you can still have fun, Friday night, Saturday lunch, and Saturday night, and maybe Sunday lunch as well. And then, Sunday evening onwards, back to usual stuff. So you have to balance it out that way. And to experiment, you have to spend time in the kitchen. You have to learn different ways of, let's say you do like the fish, or you don't like fish that much, but you're like, that fish I ate in the restaurant once was nice. I don't know how to make that. Well, these days, everything's on Google. Everything's on YouTube. And TikTok and Insta and whatever. And so you can usually find recipes, but you have to experiment. Maybe the fourth or fifth one you try will be the one you like.
Yeah. In my case, I have Sasha. I just pick up the phone and call her. Okay, Dr. Tarek, we just have to go on a short break, and when we return, we will continue our conversation. Just stay online, Dr. Tarek, and we'll get back, okay? This is Chai Time on 103.5 Hum FM. Welcome back to Chai Time on 103.5 Hum FM. We are in conversation with Dr. Tarek, and we are talking about healthy lifestyle, weight management. We've been talking about some of the medications that are out there, and it's been such a great conversation, a whole wealth of information from Dr. Tarek. So let's just continue with our conversation. Hi, Dr. Tarek. Welcome back again.
Thank you.
So we were talking about the weight loss medications, and actually I have Sasha here too, and off air we were discussing too, and so she has a question for you.
So I've heard that there is a different, it's more of an herbal, not even herbal, I don't have the words. So it's called berberine. And a lot of people have said it's like the nature's version of Ozempic. Is there any truth to that?
Berberine. I'm not too familiar with that.
Okay.
How do you spell that?
Berbine, I believe.
Oh, berberine.
Yes.
Is that what you mean?
Yes, okay. Berberine.
Without many such supplements which are sort of natural or found in plants, they can have value in the sense that, a lot of medications used to come from plants.
Yeah.
And still do, some of them. And so, I'm not sure it's I mean, like a naturalism in the sense that I'm not aware that it works on those receptors that specifically those things work on. But I have heard of his blood sort of sugar regulation properties.
Uh-huh.
Now, the thing with it is, with many medications, unless they go through a rigorous scientific methodology type trials, it's mm-hmm. hard for us to make any significant benefit attributable to it.
Right.
For example, the medications that we talked about earlier, those, you know, they take those get studied by taking tens, you know, thousands of hundreds and or in some cases thousands of patients, putting them in as a relatively controlled environments or studies that that they're similar in many ways, but this is the medication is the only difference, and then they see whether it changes weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
It also depends on what target we're looking for. Like many medications even herbal treatments or teas may have some beneficial effects in terms of mild appetite regulation and so forth. But the issue is they're good for sort of on an average person, you know, 5, 7, 8 pound weight loss, 10 pound weight loss, and if that's mm-hmm. what someone desires, then it can be worth trying I mean, as a physician, I don't have an opinion
right.
on a particular herbal, and I can't give a recommendation on those. But
okay.
but as far as them to try, that they've felt is safe and widely available, is okay. But if someone wants to lose 30, 40, 50 pounds, unfortunately, even with the current strong medications, that's not easy.
Yeah.
And with the strong medications like the GLP-1 analogs I'm talking about, mm-hmm. Like Ozempic, and lifestyle changes, then even then those on average give what we say, depending on the type of medication, but 10 to 15% weight loss. And some cases, some of the other medication called Mounjaro or Zepbound uh-huh. can give up to 20% of weight medication. So then if you're 200 pounds and you want to lose 40 pounds, it's possible with lifestyle changes some of those medications give, while others who need to lose 100 pounds
mm-hmm.
And for the certainly lifestyle medications is worth trying, but if that doesn't work, then they may have to consider more, you know, significant things like surgery even.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was my next question regarding surgery. Like, when is surgery appropriate, and you know, what are the different types of surgeries out there?
Right. So surgery is considered in the past, in general, it's not the best measure, but what we call body mass index is one measure, BMI.
Yeah.
And you can just put a BMI online, the calculator will come up, you put your height and weight in there. And generally, if your BMI is above 40, you qualify. Above 35, you qualify if you have diabetes, et cetera. Although the latest guidelines and some insurance companies will approve weight loss surgery for even BMIs in the lower 30s, especially for certain populations like South Asians and Asians, because they tend to get some of the metabolic syndrome or diabetes actually earlier than some of the other races. So,
mm-hmm.
And they tend to get heart disease a little bit earlier than other races. So it may be something that they may be considered for surgery at a bit lower targets than others. But certainly someone who has multiple obesity-related illnesses, they have blood pressure and their kidneys being affected, and they have diabetes, heart disease, things like that. Those are the ones, and they're overweight, that I think they should seriously consider, especially if they're significantly overweight. And they have an extra, extra 70, 80, 100 pounds on them.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are appropriate candidates, because the studies do show that if you do surgery on some patients like that, their chance of getting strokes, heart attacks, even cancer gets decreased significantly over the next 10 years. Some of these diseases are actually, especially in South Asian community, are quite common in terms of diabetes, et cetera,
okay.
and high blood pressure.
Okay. And so is obesity genetic?
There is some component to that. It's nature versus nurture debate. it certainly can run in certain families a little more. Sometimes we use the term epigenetics, meaning they may have a tendency a little more than others, some people, due to their genetics, but then it's exacerbated by the lifestyle. Because they may be the ones that are more attracted to the sugary, fatty foods, etc. So it's not completely genetic, I don't think, but there's definitely a component that there's a, because it's not just someone's overweight because they're lazy or that's not the case. They can have genuine physiological changes within them that makes it hard to lose weight. And some of that can be helped with a really kind of comprehensive approach where you do see a dietitian, you maybe see a psychologist too, you see some medications may help, or some surgery may help on top of all of this. There are those type of aspects. And I'm sorry for your question about surgeries. There are surgeries that make the stomach smaller, something like gastric sleeves that make a stomach into a banana-shaped stomach. There are others, something like the gastric bypass, that make the stomach smaller, and we bypass a little bit of the intestine to sort of add a hormonal effect to it as well for appetite suppression. There used to be something that people ask frequently about the lab band. There used to be a band that they would put around the stomach. That's still available in a few places, but generally in the U.S., it's mostly become obsolete and not being done anymore.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
So I have a question. What are your thoughts about intermittent fasting?
So fasting has shown to potentially have significant benefits. When it comes to weight, I think if you intermittently fast in appropriately, meaning let's say you do a 12-hour or a 16-hour fast for the day, and you eat in an 8-hour window. But in that 8-hour window, you eat without being excessively restricted, but at the same time, don't go overboard.
Right.
Then it works because it does have some other benefits, anti-inflammatory benefits, etc. But as far as weight is concerned. It only works if you're reasonable in the remaining 8-10 hours that you are eating. For audience that maybe Muslims or Ramadan's coming up,
right.
And many of them they will fast for 12-13 hours, but they don't lose weight; they may gain weight in it because you feast when you open your fast, and maybe in the morning before you start your fast. So if you take it excessive, then you don't lose weight. But if you're reasonable about those meals, then you actually do lose weight. So it's that, because many of our very overweight patients, I'm talking about 400-pound patients, 450-pound patients, they may only have one or two meals a day. They're sort of like fasting, but then those meals, they have like 2,500 calories.
Yeah.
Stuff,
where they go really like pick up fast food and, like I said, two extra large meals and McDonald's and things like that. But it helps, certainly. But if you're reasonable in the 8 hours, it absolutely can be a good way for people to do it.
It all depends on what you're putting in your stomach, basically, what you're eating.
It is. It
and
is,
how but, much of it?
if you're intermittently fasting, you don't have to be as restrictive as you are when you're not fasting all day. Uh-huh. So, but it doesn't mean you go overboard either.
Right.
You know, in terms of, so when you are eating in that 8-hour window, you don't have to eat like rice cakes and cardboard, you know. but also doesn't mean that in that open window, then you pick up like a double Whopper and triple cheeseburger and, you know, huge fries and 32-ounce drink and stuff like that. So if you're eating, let's say, grilled chicken and fish, have extra pieces of that. That should be okay. Or if you're, you know, have extra non-starchy vegetables, whatever, eat more of that and you'll be fine, even if you eat a little extra.
Yeah. So, you know, doctor, like amongst us friends, we Chai Time girls, we are six of us, and we always talk about healthy lifestyle and all. And I think also when we are all in that same mind frame, we kind of help each other too, because if we try a new, say, a new recipe, a healthy, you know, like anything with chicken or fish or anything as such, we share it.
Yeah.
So I think that also kind of like helps.
Motivates us.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the word. Yeah. So, you know, it's sometimes.
No, absolutely. That.
Yes, that go ahead.
Group support is very important. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're all, it's like anything else. If you're always with a friend who wants to go out and party and
you know, then they're not in our group anymore. I'm just kidding.
So it helps to have in a group, you know, just like I advise my kids, like hopefully they have friends that are somewhat studious. They can have fun, but, you know, somewhat pay attention to their studies and things like that. So this is, if you have friends and you can share
a good balance.
That support absolutely helps, because without that, it is very hard. So whether it's for exercising or more importantly for even eating healthier and stuff.
Right. Yeah, I know. We even exercise together. Yeah.
In fact, I just made her book her class for the evening.
There was one spot left, and I took it. So, Dr. Tariq, you know, besides active lifestyle and healthy food diets, are there, you know, would you is there any advice for maintaining a healthy weight besides that?
Yeah. So people underestimate the importance of a couple of additional things. People, you know, a lot of concentrations on food and exercise, but stress and sleep are extremely important, because they very much will affect the other two, the diet and exercise that people talk about. So bad lack of sleep, consistently being tired, it contributes a lot to weight gain, I think, because the decisions that you have to make for weight management, such as, you know, eating right, maybe going for a walk or exercise, requires effort. Mm. Requires both mental effort and physical effort. And if you're tired, then you don't have the energy or the capacity to fight that. So adequate sleep is key, and then the stress management as well. Because many of us, when we're more stressed, we're likely to eat more. And it's all about bandwidth. You know, sort of like. If stress is, you know, we only have I also give an example sometimes of, you know, we only have a certain amount of RAM. Like if you're a computer, you know, if you open too many windows, you know, you get that wheel of death where it's just kind of spinning, or you can't open another window, or you can't do it. We're like that. If we're too stressed, too much stuff going on, you know, we can't open a whole nother window of exercise and a whole nother window of healthy eating. It's just too much. We're like, oh, this is too much.
Yeah.
So just kind of being mindful of that and managing your stress and sleep is very important. And without that, it can be almost impossible to do that. It's still possible, obviously, but that's something very important to pay attention to, both stress and sleep.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we don't, you know, sleep is truly very important to get a good night's rest. And many of us are so much into our devices these days that we don't even realize, you know, half the night is gone. And that, you know, I'm glad you've mentioned that, because that is important. And of course, the stress level too. So everything has to be balanced, right?
Devices contribute to that, right? Like there aren't enough stresses in life that now you have to stress about friend looking this, or going on vacation to Italy and Costa Rica and having fun and on Instagram.
Yeah.
So that's fine. I'm not against social media itself, but I'm just saying, like, fine, look at it, but at night, avoid looking at that, because all it may do is either make you stress you out, or make you envious, right, or make you, or make you just want it, which is fine, make you want more, but, you know, save that for earlier, not at night when you're kind of, at night it's best to just decompress and not do anything, or just watch a light-hearted comedy thing and then go to sleep.
Right, right. And I think, like, as parents, adults, we have to kind of, like, model that, because our kids, if we are doing it, our kids do the same, right? So that affects their health as well. So we have to kind of keep that in mind too. Because we can't be advising our kids to go to bed early and not be on their device while we are doing just the opposite. So that's important. No. Yeah. So, Dr. Tariq, are there any types of foods that will help with improving metabolism?
So I think foods, in terms of, they're no, again, in my opinion, there are no magical foods, but there are certainly foods that really badly affect your metabolism, if you want to call it that.
Okay.
And those are excessively high sugar foods and some high fat foods as well.
Okay.
By sugar, I mean refined sugars, meaning like people, and there are sugars in everything, unfortunately. Like people may think, oh, I may eat Raisin Bran cereal because it's bran, and it may be. But if you look at the contents, almost 25% or so by weight is just pure sugar in it. And so, meaning if you're eating a cup of Raisin Bran, you're eating quarter cup of sugar. Not just teaspoons, but quarter cup of sugar. So, and Frosties are even worse. Those type of foods will just make you crave, etc. Things overall that are better for you, like we always say, are things like non-starchy vegetables. For many people without allergies, nuts are a good source of fat and satiety, where it can make you feel fuller, quicker. And not all calories are the same. I think at least you're better off eating 250 calories of walnuts or almonds than you are 250 calories of potato chips or a donut. The satiety that the almonds or the nuts will give you will last longer as opposed to the donut or the thing. So hence, overall, you'll likely eat less. A lot of it's just really detoxing from the higher sugar things and just saving it for, you know, like I said, Friday night, Saturday night. And for 2 to 3 months, if you stay away from that stuff completely, when you then reintroduce it in a gradual fashion, it'll feel very excessively sweet. Whether if you're used to the Starbucks, you know, caramel frappuccino with the caramel drizzle and blah blah blah, versus whatever other super sweet drink that you're used to, it will start feeling too sweet. But you just need to get off of it for a couple of months.
All right, thank you so much, Doctor, for making the time out to join us here on Chai Time. We really enjoyed this discussion, and Sasha has such a smiling face when it comes to a healthy lifestyle. That's her favorite talk about. So we really thank you for joining us here this morning, and you have a great day today.
Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.